Okay, who do we got?
Radio.
All right, this is James. Where's John?
I'm here, James.
Okay, Tim. Tim?
Tim didn't call in yet.
Okay. 315-489. There's Cal, Tim, and we got Eric. And
let's get ready to rumble!
Okay, that's on record, man. Okay, so there's five of us. Do we have Jeff?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, we're just missing Tim. Hold on one sec. Tim, call in. Tim, oops. Damn it. Just a little house cleaning here. So as soon as he gets on, we'll start. So after about 35 minutes or so, 30 to 35 minutes, we're going to just pretend like it's not being recorded, and we're going to just talk to each other and ask questions and prepare for the next round. I can set that up while we're on the air for the next one and give you the number so you can just call right in again. Shit, no Tim. Well, we'll put him last in the rotation, and we'll start off. So, welcome to Wake Up 911 Radio. I'm your host, James Easton. Tonight we have a round table with a number of people, and we're going to start off with John. He's going to introduce himself, and we'll pass it on down the line.
Okay. Hello. Good evening. This is John Doerr. I guess I'm very excited to do this. This is the first time we're doing this, and I think it's awesome. And mostly we're going to talk about 9/11, but other subjects. And it's very important for us to keep doing this because we need to keep this in people's faces and keep it alive, because the elites want to kill it because they screwed up massively with the 9/11 event. And they know it, and a lot of other people know it, so we have to keep this alive. I believe it's extremely important, and what we're doing definitely can cause a huge change.
Okay, we got Tim in the line. Tim, how's it going?
Perfect.
Hey, James, good to hear you. John Doerr, good to hear your voice for the first time, my brother.
Hey, Tim.
All right.
To hear yours too, brother.
Yeah.
Right on. So, Tim, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're interested in, and keep it under a minute, I guess.
Okay, I'm from Staten Island, New York, just over the bridge from where John is at.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say I'm in Brooklyn.
Yeah. And what was the whole question again, James? I'm sorry.
Just, a little bit about yourself, what you're interested in.
Oh, okay, I have a public access TV show. I turn in shows, which I recommend everybody to do, especially in America. Most of us have a public access TV in our area, and I just turn in DVDs periodically, compilations of truth material. I'm on the internet, TerribleTim.com. I have a Terrible Tim YouTube. I have a song that just broke 500,000 views over the weekend, and it's up to 540,000 views, so I'm catching up to James, who has over 1 million views on one of his videos.
Awesome.
Now, the song is not a truth-related song, but what I did was I put a bunch of annotations on it pertaining to Sandy Hook and various other things that we're interested in. And I'm getting maybe 10,000-15,000 views a day now since the weekend. And people can watch the video and they could see these annotations, and they can look up these things. So I'm happy I'm able to reach some people, and we're all doing what we can. And James, you did a tremendous job, 1 million views, and all our friends here, we're all doing the best we can, and hopefully we can make a difference before it's too late. even if we're losing the fight and the odds look like they're against us, you still got to keep on fighting. Like John said, it's important to keep spreading the truth, to get the truth out there.
Right.
Right on. So next we got Eric. How's it going, Eric?
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Can you count, suckers?
How you doing, gentlemen?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Very happy to be here.
Right on. So tell us, you're from Motown, Motor City, Detroit.
From Motor City, Detroit.
Yeah, and I grew up across the river from you. Tell us what got you sort of involved in all this?
Well, it started way back with Waco back in the early 90s. When that went down, I became awake and started writing about what was going on. And I guess for about a decade, I must have fallen asleep again for a while. And then I watched a movie called Loose Change that just blew my mind and woke me right back up again, and I dove head over heels into getting to the bottom of the truth and fighting against these evil elite scumbags.
Right. Right on. Okay, yeah, and how's Jeff doing?
I'm doing good. How's everybody doing? Great to be here with a bunch of truth seekers and people who just want to wake people up to what's really going on.
Right. That's good stuff. all right, and last but not least, Doug.
How you doing? Good to be here tonight, James. It's really an honor to be amongst other people that are devoting their time to this kind of research. I personally have been at it myself for about 18 years, and I've devoted a good chunk of my life to looking into events such as this. And as the other gentleman mentioned, Waco, Sandy Hook, all these things, they're interconnected, and I think it's a great thing that we're doing, getting together and putting our minds together to bring this truth out to people. Thanks for having me again.
No problem. All right, so we'll start the first round. It's basically we're talking about what happened on 9/11. You got 6 minutes, so just sort of keep track and just unload basically the chronology of events from your standpoint, what you were doing that day, and basically the day. People love listening to this stuff, and it takes them back too, and then they start talking about it. So that's why I'm asking you to do this. So we'll start with John.
Okay. The only thing is, James, just chime in with my 6 minutes. I'm not near a clock. this is John Doerr. I live in Brooklyn, New York, my whole life, right across the river from Manhattan. On 9/11, I was woken up by my mother when the event started happening. It came over the television that the first plane hit. She woke me up and said, you know, a plane flew into the World Trade Center. I ran downstairs, and as I got to the television, I watched the second plane fly into the South Tower, and was just, like, dumbfounded. You know, it was just insane to watch and to, you know, realize that this was really happening. From that time on, I went up, like, on my roof. I was, you know, watching the TV, going up on my roof, looking at it, looking at the smoke coming up from the buildings. I'm about roughly 15 miles from Lower Manhattan, so, I got a pretty good view from my roof. Just watch the day unfold. The biggest thing that stood out in my mind that day was I honestly thought that there was going to be, like, a nuclear blast along with it. I was just waiting for the big white flash, to be honest. After, you know, the towers collapsed, the wind shifted in the afternoon, and the smoke started blowing through Brooklyn, and literally had to barricade me and my family in the house and turn the air conditioner on because the smoke was just, you know, billowing down the streets. And to me, it was just really scary. And but at that time, you know, I fell for the whole, you know, terrorist thing and all of that. I wasn't really aware or awake to the whole conspiracy thing and the elites and all that stuff. It took me like about 2 years later to actually, you know, run into stuff on the internet that finally started to wake me up and everything. But I knew about six people that died that day. A good friend, Gerald Atwood, who was a firefighter, lived right down the block from me, died that day. He left a wife and two children, and she was pregnant at the time. So it was a horrendous day for me. You know, just horrible. And
you can stop there. Thanks, right, man.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, were you on Staten Island at the time, or?
Yeah, I was sleeping on my couch, and I was kind of groggy, and I saw this thing on television. Somehow I had it in my mind that it was something happening in Chicago or whatever. But then as I was waking up, I was getting the whole picture. So I tried to go into work. I was doing hospital security at Luther Medical Center in Brooklyn, Sunset Park. I tried to cross the bridge. They wouldn't let me cross the bridge. And then I got home. I called them up the job, and they said, oh, you got to try to come in. You got to try to come in. So I go again, and they turn me away from the bridge. But somebody else who was from Staten Island was able to get in, so it made me look like, hey, how come you didn't go to work? And like John, I bought the whole story. I didn't know any better. I mean, it took up until 2012 when a friend of mine sent me some materials. And I'm the kind of guy that you could reach. You put something in front of me, I'll look at it, and I wish somebody showed me some materials pertaining to this thing being a false flag a lot earlier, and I could have maybe did some more in my own little way to fight back against this nonsense.
Right.
So.
Right on. That's good. That's good that you brought that up. I mean, it's pretty essential to, like, if people are going to be ignorant and you shove something in their face, well, that might do it.
Yeah, and James, I'll tell you what, some people like me, I'm somebody who could be reached. I look at things. I see about the chemtrails, Sandy Hook, Boston, Holzapan. I even picked apart one of these hoaxes myself, that Ottawa fake CPR and that NYPD fake shooting CPR. But a lot of people, you can't put something in front of them. They don't want to know. They don't want to go there, and that's very unfortunate because enough people don't wake up to all of this garbage, then it only gets worse and worse.
Right. All right, I'm going to hand over to Eric.
Hey, guys. Again, honored to be here with all of you. I've looked at everybody's work who's on this roundtable with us and just blown away. Great guys. Look like you're in it for the right reasons for humanity. And
right.
When I saw Loose Change, you know, I rewoke in a big way, and it was nonstop from there. And I think it's really important that we put out messages to people of hope and ways that we can win this war. I think we're making a huge difference by seeking the truth. I think we're demonizing the attack. First they ignore us, then they attack us, and then, of course, we win. I think we're taking action and we're gaining ground. I think we're entering into the hardcore, no-hold-barred attacks right now. And I salute everybody out there in the trenches fighting for truth, and we're not backing down. I think we all understand the game plan. We understand what the globalists, Zionists, whatever you want to call these guys, are trying to do. Whereas 20 years ago, almost nobody knew the IRS was set up on Jekyll Island at the same time as the Federal Reserve. Almost nobody knew the Federal Reserve was private. Almost nobody knew what crony capitalism was. now even a lot of the general public know these facts. You know, and I see we have all these hired guns of the system who are part of 9/11, and their camp is out there trying to prop up the system, and they know it's fraud, and they know it's going to crush us when it fails. I mean, we all know that this economy is designed to implode globally, and that'll usher in the world order. I don't want this collapse. I don't think any of you guys do. Even though it's completely corrupt, I don't want civil war. I don't want cops and citizens killing each other, because that's how they bring in global government. We always get accused of trying to spread lies and fear-mongering. I think we're trying to enlighten others and wake them up. Would you guys agree?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think good sectors of the establishment are not completely crazy out of their mind. They understand that we're entering the end game. So even if they got their wealth and, you know, secured their wealth through the system, they understand those at the top are going to crush them in the end. I mean, we know the guys that we're fighting against, they seek total power over everything. Why did Hitler do what he did? You know, Germany had a really great economy. Why is ISIS chop children up to pieces and burn them alive? You know, because this is what mentally ill people do. They're psychopaths. They want to dominate. They're evil. They want total power. So I think we need to stop trying to determine why they do these things and realize they operate from a completely different logic path and thinking than us. I think we realize we're fighting against like a psychological virus, powers of spiritual warfare and principality. But to these evil fuckers, makes perfect sense to them. I think we got to stop back and realize this is the cause of the problem. I don't think any of us are trying to offer a paradise without solutions, but we're trying to offer solutions that will make the world a better place for all of us to live. Everyone at this roundtable, we have good intentions, and we want to see everyone treated well. We want to see them become mentally and spiritually balanced. I'm sick of this freaking loser mentality. It's the opposite of what built this country. It's like they hate everyone who's successful. Then we don't pay attention to people like the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds. All they've done is robbed, stolen, and killed their way to the top. 9/11, top of the list.
You got it.
I think all is waiting for us, a perfect paradise. By creating unity, I think we can win this battle. If we change our decisions, we can reject MD's advice, start listening to naturopathic doctors. We can stop arguing about planes or no planes. Thermite and nukes, understand that we're fighting for the same thing, to expose and eradicate these evil pukes, but not in a violent, evil level. That'd be just like what they're doing, but by spreading awareness and continuing to fight this war on the info level. Stop this self-defeating thinking. Let's just stop it. Fuck the mainstream media. Let's heal ourselves and heal others. Wake them up. I call that a win-win.
Yeah. You know, it's cool that we can work at a strategy as to how we go about, you know, making people aware and informing them what they need to know. You know, it takes a little bit of critical thinking and hard work to generate that kind of, like, what Tim was saying. You know, he had material shoved in his face. I think the sheep are, you know, I call them sheep because that's what they're like. They're like a flock of following sheep. They just do what everybody
mentality.
Else is doing. What's that? Hive mentality?
Hive mentality. That's a good word for it right there.
That's a big bonus word score.
All right, exactly. Okay, so Jeff, how's it going?
Good, brother James. So you want to hear like what I was, what happened, or how I heard about 9/11 that day, or is that what we're doing?
Yeah. Let's hear 9/11 the day for you.
Right on. Well, that morning, I was a construction superintendent running a new condominium job about 30 miles east of Seattle, Washington. The internet was still semi-new for us. They're using it as a superintendent, but got the feed that morning that the plane had hit World Trade Center in New York. So we're watching that, a bunch of guys, everybody's kind of stops working. There's probably 100 guys on my job site working. I'm, I'm keeping track of, but, you know, basically the job just came to a complete standstill. Had like 30 guys flooded in my job trailer. We're all sitting around watching my computer, watching live stuff, and then the second one hit, and I was like, oh my God, we're under attack. You know, our country's under attack. You know, so like, so it's, we're like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And we're just watching us going, what do we do? What do we do? So like, oh, it's, you know, we've got my brother, was like, hey, I got a big flag. Let me go grab it. We'll get that thing up, and you know, let's do something. So we got his flag and framed up a deal. It's probably like a pretty good sized flag, probably like a 4x6 flag, framed up some 2x4s, and our job site overlooked this whole city below us, about 20,000 people. So we put this flag up and went and got a couple 500-watt halogen lights and strong power. So we set this whole thing up like, you know, we're getting ready to go to, you know, we're thinking we're going to war, you know, what's going on. So, but I fully bit into the whole thing. They start feeding, oh, it's this Osama bin Laden guy. It's this Muslim radicals. And so I'm like, okay, you know, we need to go turn the Middle East into a parking lot, you know, just nuke the whole damn thing. So I was fully on board with what I was being fed at the time. And it wasn't until 2007 that I woke up and I saw the Zeitgeist movie, and it just freaking blew my mind. Because I started looking into it, man. You can't dispute facts if you're a logically minded person like I am, like all you guys are. So I immediately woke up that was what we were told happened was not that's not how it went down. So that set me on my journey, and I ended up writing a couple books out of it. That's what I'm into, is just researching the stuff and putting it into books and getting it out to people. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
And then Jeff and I had hooked up, talked, like old friends meeting up again, talking, and we decided to start a show together.
Yes. So yeah, me and brother Eric hooked up, and we got a fledgling show going, and we're hoping to build that thing into something. Something really great. Sounds like we're going live next week with a chat room and call in. So I'm ready to just keep spreading this message. Me and Eric are just kind of teaming up on this thing just to keep. I'm giving my first book a book away for free, and I always have, and I always will at my website. We're throwing everything in the kitchen sink at the Illuminati, at the New World Order people, just to try to wake people up, try to either slow down their agenda or stop in its tracks. Ideally, we would stop it and hang all of them. But I don't know if we'll be able to get to that point someday. But I sure would love to see all those guys hang. The Rothschilds, Rockefellers, all of them, because they're all just a piece of crap.
Right. All right. Well, you know, your story expressed panic and fear, and that's, you know, what they wanted us to feel. I was a little freaked out too, but I'm going to pass it on to Doug.
How's everybody doing tonight? Thank you again. I was born and raised in Long Island, New York. I've been living upstate New York since about 2000. So I was actually up here at the time that the attacks occurred. I also was at work, and I was at a place that sold car stereos. So we were allowed to keep the music going all day. And then when the attacks hit, you know, you get the emergency broadcast. So we're all, you know, customers and coworkers huddled around the radio wondering what the fuck just happened. Oh, my God, the country's been attacked. And at the time, I had been researching a little bit for about 3 years. So it didn't hit me right away. But what really got me was, you know, I went home from work, and like probably every other American, sat in front of the TV dumbfounded, wondering what happened. And at about 5:30 p.m., I remember Building 7 coming down and thinking to myself, oh, my God, another one. But what really got me was in the next 72 hours that ensued following this event, I watched the mainstream media story change again and again and again. All of a sudden, no mention of this 47-story skyscraper that came down in Manhattan. And it's amazing to this day, you could ask the average person how many buildings came down in Manhattan. Many of them will answer two, the towers. A lot of people still aren't aware of Building 7. So to me, that was the catalyst that really propelled my research into full-time and connecting dots between this event and many others. One thing led to another. James, something you said that just struck me was the trauma that an event like this causes. When you have the collective in a state of shock and trauma, that is when they are most suggestible. So And then, you know, one thing leads to another, started discovering the Project for New American Century documents and the fact that the World Trade Center was bombed in 1993, which a lot of people aren't aware of, too, and that the FBI was, in fact, behind it. And one thing led to another, and I've just spent the last many, many years full-time devoting a lot of my life to connecting the dots. There's a thousand things I would rather be doing. Ladies and gentlemen, listening to this, this is not fun what we do. I'm sure each of these gentlemen could think of 10 million things they'd rather be doing, rather be, you know, watching their kids grow up and living in peace. But we do not live in peace. We live under a psychopathic control system with people in charge that are hell-bent on destroying every ounce of freedom that is left. So what we do is very important. We have long passed the caring point of whether we're considered conspiracy theorists or lunatics. It takes a great deal of courage to do this, and we will not stop until we have what is true freedom, not the illusion of freedom, not voting for some puppet in some sham election. And I give credit to each of you gentlemen for having the balls to do this.
Right on.
Right on. And balls is what it takes. I mean, I've been saying for a long time, you know, crow pair to everybody who turns away with a nose up in the air, like believing the official story or what have you, or not believing in chemtrails, or, you know, it's the problem is that it's such a massive conspiracy, and by design, it's that way to make everybody think it could not possibly be what these evil conspiracy theorists are telling them. But it's not that, it's not that way at all. It's, the truth is, the truth hurts, and so my experience was, well, let's see, I was working at Nortel, and I was working my first day on the job. It was unfortunately, you know, well, I walked in, and it was 9 o'clock, and I went to the location for my job, and sorry, I'm just checking something here. Just as a side note, I don't have anybody's name listed. All I have are numbers, so I can't mute anyone. So everybody has to be quiet when other people are talking. I apologize for that. I would memorize your phone numbers, but I didn't. All right, so I went to the cafeteria, and there's a bunch of people there, and I had no idea this is normal or not. And I ordered a coffee, and there's like all these people standing around the TVs. I wasn't even paying attention. And I look up, and I see the plane fly into Tower 2. The shot that's on a 45-degree angle from Tower 1, so from the corner looking on. And so you don't see Tower 2. You just see Tower 1. It's on fire. And the plane flies in, and it was just like, bam, holy shit. I knew what the Twin Towers were. I mean, I'm from Windsor, Ontario, Canada, and, you know, I'm just a small-town boy. And but I studied, I had interest in architecture and so on. I knew what the biggest buildings were, and, you know, there's tall buildings in Canada, too, so whatever. I mean, but to me, it was like, New York City is the biggest, most populous, or maybe not, but it's the world city, and the towers are called the World Trade Center. So it's like, it's pretty instantaneously shocking. You know, how do you go to work after seeing that? And so I went to work, and at 11 I heard from a coworker that one of the buildings came down. And I was like, wait a minute. It didn't register. I was like, you can't be serious. They wouldn't fall down. You know, I didn't even see it happen. And to me, it was like completely illogical. How does that happen? It was just an airplane. And after work, I got on the bus, and there was a extra on the seat. I picked it up, and I read it. And it said, you know, this all the times and everything, and showed pictures of the tower coming down. I was like, wow, that doesn't look realistic at all. And then I got home, and of course they pile drive this into our heads, you know, airplanes, towers collapsing, and I saw the towers come down, and they both came down the same way. And I knew there was something wrong. But, I mean, like everybody, I didn't swallow the story. I didn't. But I knew there was something wrong. And I did also see Building 7 come down at 5:20 in the afternoon, and was curious as to why there was nothing on that also. But I wanted to say the movie Loose Change opened a lot my eyes to a lot of stuff. And then the movie Zeitgeist as well was really powerful. And
absolutely, myself also, big time. You guys, it's a must see.
Yeah, there's a number of really, really good movies, like when you think about it. I'd say if you go on YouTube now, there's far more movies that talk about 9/11 conspiracies than there are movies that embellish the official story. So, I don't know. Okay, so we're done round one. We're off air, so to speak. I'm going to cut it here. But you guys just let it out. Let loose. Go.
We're not on the air now?
Well, we are on the air, but it's not being recorded.
Oh, why'd you shut off the record button?
because we're going to do three rounds, and this part isn't being aired.
Oh, so we got
recorded.
Live listeners. We got live listeners.
I didn't say joke. I said poke.
I don't know. I'll just shoot it off. Let's see. Next round is about how you figured out that it was a lie and what you've done about it. And I can just do the round table again and start off with John.
All right.
And ask questions, anybody, and feel free to jump in and whatever.
I just wanted to say what Jeff said was most significant, the 93 bombing.
Yeah.
The FBI set that up. Anyone could listen to the recordings on YouTube about it. And the way the FBI got out of that one was some kind of bullshit technicality, whereas the lawyer said, it's not a defense to say if only somebody would have stopped me. But the FBI set him up, gave him the bombs and said, go in there and blow the thing up. Some guy who would otherwise not harm a fly, but they groom these people and get them to do this. And that's what happened in 93.
Right. And luckily that Egyptian guy that they were setting up, he had the foresight to record his conversations with them, with the FBI agents. And that's how that all came out.
Yeah.
That it was a setup and that the FBI was involved was his recordings. So that was
jump in with that too, guys. Jump in with that stuff. If I'm saying something, you have a bunch of relevant information. That was great info. Jump right in. Yep.
Yeah, my question has always been, you know, and you guys are right, the New York Times even picked up on this. The guy's name, the informant, was Ahmed Salam. And he recorded FBI agents saying, yes, we're going to go forward with the actual bombing. They had the opportunity to either use a dummy bomb or a real bomb, and they said, no, we're going to go forward with the real bombing. Unfortunately for them, there wasn't enough damage or lives lost to really ram through the anti-terrorism legislation that they wanted to. But my question to people is, you think that whoever was responsible for that wouldn't do it again in 2001? Are you kidding me?
Right.
If I could just say, their intention, the guy parked the van in the wrong spot. If he did park it where they wanted him to park it, they were looking to collapse one tower into the other one and have it fall into Manhattan from the base.
That was McKay, right? Was that McKay?
No, in the World Trade Center, in the 93 bombing.
Oh.
That was intended to collapse the entire tower in one shot. Into the other tower or into blocks of buildings in Manhattan.
And it didn't work for him.
Right, he parked it in the wrong spot. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that it blew a 25-foot wide hole, five floors deep,
Right.
And it was next to the columns, the interior columns, but mm-hmm. it didn't do anything to the columns.
Right.
Because they're so fucking thick.
Right.
A little bomb wouldn't. This is a big bomb, but it wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. And the floor decks weren't even that thick. So I wouldn't think that. I think there was a sort of like a test, a drill, like McVeigh with Oklahoma.
Oklahoma City.
Yeah, he was set up. And so this other guy was set up. And Osama was set up. So. There's a common theme.
And I also think it was they needed to get, like, the terrorism legislation, which was a big thing that Oklahoma City did for them, was to ram through the terrorist legislation through Congress and all of that.
It's definitely the deadliest act of terrorism within the U.S. prior to 9/11.
Right.
Oklahoma bombing.
Yeah.
We had, like, 170 killed and over 600 injured.
And in that instance, there's witnesses and supposedly film of the FBI bringing out unblown up bombs. And nobody's, you know, and also the fact that they were warned. FBI agents in the Oklahoma City building went to work that day. They were all pre-warned.
Yeah, that's the Oklahoma City bombing event's another one where the official story just... It's just ridiculous from start to finish. None of it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's another one, you know, where the official version of events over the next several days changed again and again. At first, the Ryder truck was so close to the building, and then it was closer, the next report, and closer, and then it's just none of it adds up. McVeigh was the patsy, just like Bin Laden. He was also a military asset. We know this. It's a matter of public record right now. And I actually have the original newscasts of, you know, the mainstream media saying that day, we've just found another unexploded bomb in the building. And then, you know, the story changes. But I think the problem is that, again, the reason that they can get away with changing the story like that is because when the event happens, people are shocked, they're traumatized, and
they have
a very short attention span, it seems. And, you know, once the official story gets solidified, usually within the first 72 hours, that's the one that's broadcast on every front page and in every media outlet, and that becomes solidified in the public mind. And people just go on with their lives, accept the official story, and don't bother to do any homework of their own. That's why, you know, this cabal can keep getting away with this over and over again. But I think the tide is turning, as I believe it was John that said earlier. People are starting to catch on.
Absolutely.
You know what it is? These people who perpetuate this garbage, they've studied it. They study psychology. They understand.
Absolutely.
They understand how the brain works, and they understand that we receive information first at the emotional part of our brain, the R partition, the reptilian part of the brain. And it doesn't get to the neocortex where people solve problems and use executive thinking. It ends, and they know that, because ostensibly it looks like, wow, why would they dare pull off something so monstrous and so obvious? And the answer is they study this, they know how we receive information, and they know about the hive mentality and that people run for safety and cover, oh, yeah, protect us and everything, you know? And they know what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people already forgot that we have missing nukes off the East Coast. We have missing nukes. People have forgotten about that already.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about under Obama's watch?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a pretty big deal when we have missing nukes.
But that's most significant. The way they've studied the way the brain operates, and they take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really,
it's part of the ancient knowledge.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's what the ancient mystery schools are all about. They carry the ancient knowledge that, you know, they have the human psyche down to a science, and they know how to manipulate it inside and out. And that's how they get
Gentlemen, I think that's like one area where a lot of researchers really don't delve into too much is the psychological connection. To me, it's always been a battle of the mind first, like a war on consciousness. And you're absolutely right. The people or the creatures that orchestrate this shit they're masters of the occult knowledge. They absolutely understand how human consciousness works. They absolutely understand the human psyche, and they manipulate it accordingly. So I think it's really important as researchers that we bring that kind of side, that angle into it, is the psychological understanding, definitely.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Okay,
totally.
So we have 5 minutes left. So we just talked about some heavy shit. Do you guys want to rehash it, or do you want to try to touch on it and then tell more about 9/11?
Well, I think
you guys are so knowledgeable, man, that we should just let it roll.
Doug and Jeff have it right. We should make sure that we introduce the part of the consciousness and how they take advantage of how the brain operates, and make that a part of our conversation coming up.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay, then here's the deal. Next round, it's there's no order. People just talk. Be courteous, whatever. Let it out. I can just cut out the parts where I was like, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do, and I can keep what we just talked about. So we got 3 minutes left. Any last words? Any words you would like to say before the show ends?
Well, I think we could say, let's also mention, Building 6 was hollowed out. And Building 4 had these anomalous holes in the roof. And, you know, the AE 9/11 Truth, they focus on Building 7, but, Building 6, Building 4 are also very important.
Well, yeah, and so is the gigantic, massive, molten crater at the base of Tower 2.
Let's throw some light on Building 6, because that isn't talked about a lot in many of the 9/11 Truth circles.
Yeah.
I've seen, there's this guy who did photos and he escaped to Peru or Uruguay or wherever, I don't know, but he took a shitload of photos that they didn't want him to take, and he put them up, and they're calling him back for murder charges. He's seeking asylum in that country, and his pictures demonstrate that Building 6, I mean, it couldn't have been an explosion. There is something going on there, but I don't buy the story that Dew weapons were used on the towers because of the fact that the walls were blowing outward, and I think there could have been nukes. And as for airplanes, there were no planes. But the point is. I don't know, you guys probably all know this. I figured it out in the last couple of weeks. John kept reminding me of Fibonacci, and I set the golden rectangle on the buildings, and figured out that the plane holes match up with the geometry. It's uncanny. It's even the NIST drawing fits perfectly into a Fibonacci rectangle. I mean, it's astounding how... It's like a slap in the face, and it's but it is the evidence. It is hard, tangible evidence that this was a design from the get-go, from the creation,
from the
tower.
Building of the buildings themselves.
Either that, or they just used that and went with it. But it's going to cut out in 60 seconds. Anyone else?
Well, James, what you just mentioned, what you discovered, I call that the icing on the cake and the cherry on top, because we know 1,000 times over that it's an inside job, and you just you just wrapped it up in a good package right there.
Yep.
Well, I've been pushing it, pushing out memes every day, and you know it's catching on. I did a number of videos, the same shit every day. You just put a new spin on it, and hopefully it gets around. One of the videos I did 2 days ago got 1,500 views, so that's pretty cool. One last thing to say before it cuts out is, if you tell people that, if you tell people the same thing over and over,